Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, this is a special one today, guys.
It's so special.
This is a special one. We are just recording this after we have just done a podcast, which you're about to listen to, with one of the most famous golfers on the planet.
Yes.
This is really, really exciting. We've been trying to get this podcast arranged for a while now. Now, you know, if you're a fan of the podcast, the Rich Hills Golf Show podcast, you'll know we mention this particular golfer quite a lot.
He's our bread and butter. He gets us the views.
So it's a pleasure to invite him on. Today, we have Bryson DeChambeau on the podcast. The 9th best player in the world, the longest player on the PGA Tour, 8-time winner out on tour, and also a YouTuber.
I honestly can't believe we're sitting here now. It's done, it's dusted, it's in the can, and what an interview. It was like an interview slash, like, getting to know Bryson a bit deeper. He was incredible.
Now, this was done over Zoom. He's in Torrey Pines at the moment. So, where we love to have guests, obviously, on the podcast, and we love to have get the audio absolutely perfect. This is on Zoom audio, so bear with us on that. Me and Guy are on mics, but Guy is on Zoom. But, you know, to be honest, Bryson.
Well, my new name's Gyson DeCharnock from now on.
But Bryson's audio is still very good.
Yes.
We talk about a lot of topics. We obviously cover the topic about distance.
Of course.
We obviously talk about the topic of him being now friends with Tiger Woods.
Of course.
We talk about the fact, where is distance going to lead to?
Mm-hmm.
His strategy around St. Andrews this year.
That was good.
Which I thought was incredibly interesting and insightful.
One thing you had to ask him, you know, you've been known for calling out Bryson for not showering for. So obviously, when it came to the crunch, you didn't ask him that, did you?
I might have asked him.
He did ask him.
Why he doesn't shout for?
Right at the end of the podcast, so he couldn't leave.
Just when I thought we'd become mates.
Yes. And I think we're still mates, me and Bryson.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
We're mates.
So Bryson messages Guy, didn't message me. That's actually a fact. But either way, guys, we could not do this without you. Mm. And we don't do soppy thank you so much and all this very often. But genuinely, thank you for being massive fans of the podcast. Thank you for listening, downloading, rating on Spotify, watching the YouTube videos, watching the clips, supporting the Facebook page. You know, Guy works incredibly hard on this. I kind of just turn up and hold a mic and talk for a little bit. But collectively, we're very proud of the product we've got to. Number one podcast in golf. And honestly, your support allows things like this to happen. When we reach out to Bryson and talk about coming on the podcast, he's like, you know what? Yeah. I'll give this a chance. So a bar now, maybe Tiger Woods, we're talking to the second biggest name in golf right now. So sit back, relax. And this is a deep dive into the world of Bryson DeChambeau.
It is a good one.
Enjoy. And thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Well, Bryson, thank you for being on the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast. This is very, very exciting. I feel like the podcast probably wouldn't exist if it wasn't for you, Bryson.
I don't know about that. Stop. There's plenty of other people that have been amazing.
Your name gets mentioned many times, so we're excited to have you on. Really is a privilege and a pleasure. We want to kick off with 9 quick fire questions.
Oh boy,
and a little bit tailored to you as well.
Yeah, the kind of either or questions, Bryson. But if you want to elaborate, feel free. So yeah. There's actually 8, right? We did miss out one. But anyway, that'll do. So first one, 9 holes or the driving range?
Oh, driving range.
That was quick. Is that easy?
Yeah.
And has that always been the case, or is it driving range now because of obviously quest for distance, etc.?
It's always been the driving range. So when I was younger, I would practice probably for about 7-8 hours a day, and then I'd go play 3 holes to make sure everything that I practiced that day worked well. And that was kind of my process that I went through every Saturday, because that's the only time I had to do that. But then every afternoon, I was always on the driving range. And I'd always go play like 3 or 4 holes. It was never like a 9-hole thing. It was always, does my practice work on the golf course?
Nice. And that's not changed. You're still driving range, because I see you go on the range beforehand and even after rounds when you're out on tour.
Oh, yeah. Yep, for sure. All the time. I love it. It's my happy place.
I was totally the opposite of junior, and that might be where I went wrong. I would much rather be hitting balls on the course than on the range.
I'll tell you this. There's plenty of people that don't use that model and have been very successful. So it's very tailored to whoever feels comfortable with it. And, you know, if it works for them, I mean, that's the most important part about golf. Everybody's so unique and different that there's not one way to play the game. I think that's the beauty of the game of golf.
Thing is, though, it must be easier to hit balls in the range when you are flushing it. Like for us hitting balls, or certainly for me hitting balls, if I was catching it fresh every time at the middle of the club, I'd be really enjoying it. But when you're not and you're fatting them, you're thinning them, it isn't that fun.
It isn't. And that's why you bring the torture to the golf course, I guess, for you guys. People to do that. And that's the tough part, because everybody's always like, what do you do when you hit 5, 6, 7 shots in a row that are the exact same? I'm like, I want to hit 10 in a row. I want to hit 15 in a row. Yeah. Because golf is a game of repeatability. It's about how good are your misses, right? And so everybody get that one good shot that goes in the hole. I mean, I've only had one hole in one my whole entire life, right? By the way.
What?
Yeah, and that was I'll get into that in a little bit. But I've only had one hole in one. I've only had like one perfect shot, right? As people would say. But my bad shots are usually a lot better than other people's sometimes. Now with the distance in play and stuff that's going on there. Sometimes my bad shots can be pretty far off the line, but it's fun. I enjoy it. As much as I hate it, I enjoy it.
You know what I'm enjoying about this so far?
Go on.
This is quickfire. Yeah, on question one, we've dived into so many sub-questions. Let's move into question number 2.
Okay, number 2, Netflix or YouTube?
YouTube.
Yes, that's the right answer.
That is the correct answer.
Tiger or Jack?
Say again?
Tiger or Jack?
Boy, that's a tough one. For me, though, it's got to be Tiger, just knowing him pretty personally. It's great.
Which must be pretty cool, by the way.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, to be honest with you, everybody, you know, could talk about what's gone on, but he's done things in his life for certain reasons. And everything he's done, I for the most part, understand from a protection perspective, just because, you know, he was never able really to live a normal life. And I do have a lot of respect for, you know, what he's done for the game of golf and how he's gone about doing it for the game of golf. It's pretty inspiring and something I always look up to.
And the fact you can call him a friend now is pretty cool.
It's great. It's very nice. And I respect it. And, you know, it's not like we're best friends or anything, but it's something that, you know, I can call him up if I've got a question or something, and you know, he's always there for me. So it's been awesome.
Nice.
Driving or putting?
It's funny. Those are my two favorite categories in the game of golf. Used to be iron play back in the day. I still love it, but I would say right now driving, just because I'm on the quest to understand, you know, what goes on at 200 mile an hour ball speed. We're getting closer for sure.
Wow, but is that like a 200 ball speed average? Because I've seen you cranking it over that 200 mark quite a few times.
Yeah, it's funny. Your body goes through swells and ups and downs with how ready you are to swing the club fast. So like yesterday, I was swinging around like 190, 93 mile an hour ball speed pretty consistently. But then 2 days ago, I got to 216 ball speed with a long driver. And so it's just like, it's your body is just always fighting to try and get comfortable with whatever it's ready for that day. It's not always muscular. It's a lot of neurological stuff, but like your nervous system being ready to go, your CNS. And sometimes you're just not ready to go that day. Your body's not recovered. And it may not be muscular at all. It's just like how your brain's firing that day. It's just not on point.
It's almost like a runner. Sometimes a runner, as daft as that seems, like quite a less complicated move than a golf swing.
Yeah.
Runners can have good days and bad days, and 100%. Good runs and bad runs.
And it's not about their muscles. It's about their ability to just fire and have everything work in sync. That's a
it's
big
weird because I think I saw one of your YouTube videos about it's hard to feel fast. And we went to the range today, actually, and hit a few balls. We were inspired by your ball speed. Rick got 164, I got 160. Okay. So I don't want to flex too hard.
I wasn't fast today. I was just 164, you know.
What was?
But that's like my best of the best. I need to up that speed.
We were trying to get there. But what was crazy, we actually had Rick's GC quad as well. And I was trying to hit them hard. I was getting like 108 club head speed, which I know is laughable. But then I said, right, I'm going to do an encore swing and actually aim at a target. Yeah. Swung what felt slower, 113.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird. It's the weirdest thing. So it's not about how hard you swing it. It's about, I guess you could say, when you swing it hard. It's not, because if you try and swing it hard in your backstroke, you're going to lose a lot of energy. It's about when you deliver that energy. And so there's a lot of times where I'm feeling like I'm delivering it the same way, and I'm just not. And it's something that no human can really understand because it's so complicated. You can feel it and you can train it. Those are the only two things you can kind of do for the most part. But sometimes the feel component of it or the sensation component of it is very difficult to line the mechanics up. It's super random. And, you know, you can kind of sense. So for example, my body usually starts to work really well Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that's kind of how I've primed it. And then I work out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, do a speed training session in between. And then, you know, I'm tired going into Wednesday and Thursday, I get better. Friday, I feel really good. Saturday, I'm like, let's go. And Sunday, the same thing. So I'm kind of amping it up every week to make sure that I'm producing speed at the right moment in time.
Yeah, that's how you win golf tournaments. Yep. So go back to the point. You've got tomorrow. You can only do one thing. Are you doing driving all day or putting all day?
I can only do one thing tomorrow. It'd probably be driving because we're still trying to figure out the whole aspect of the driver. It's very close.
And it's a bit more fun. Yeah. It's a bit more fun driving, isn't it?
It is. That's the funny part about it. You know, people talk about growing the game of golf, and, you know, we can talk about putting, and that's a very important factor. But people just want to go to the driving range, especially newbies, and hit it far. They see a lot of guys out there hitting it far, and they want to be like, I want to do that. There's something super cavemanish, I guess you could say, hitting something with a bat, you know, and a club, right? So,
well, even at the range today, just quickly, there's a couple of leaderboards that use Top Tracer, and the Top Tracer for longest driver had many more participants than the leaderboard for closest to the pin.
Correct.
Because longest driver is the sexy part of it.
Correct.
It is.
It's the fun and sexy part for sure.
So this one, it's an either or, but there's two kind of questions. So firstly, which is most important for golf? And then secondly, which do you enjoy doing the most? And it's squat or bench press?
Oh, squat for sure by a mile. It helps create vertical ground reaction forces. It's a big deal for the golf swing. Your bench press, you're not really doing that since your arms are already pretty far out. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really doing much when you're gaining bench press. If anything, you're losing some mobility and trunk rotation sometimes when you're doing that, just because you're locking it in here and you're not used to rotating with your chest out. Anyway, long story short, squatting is a way better motion to do and train to get up in strength if you're trying to produce speed.
But bench makes you look better on the beach, right?
Oh, for sure. You get that chest out, you know.
What kind of like rep range are you training at then? Because like we were on this before, like obviously kind of the bodybuilding split, you're doing like 10 reps maybe, but are you like at a one rep max or three reps? What's the kind of key for people listening to this who want to get stronger for golf? What would you recommend to kind of aim for? Well,
the first thing I would say is listen to your body. I've got a trainer back in Denver, Greg Roskoff, who we talk in depth quite a bit about this. I also talked to Chris Como about this. You know, when is the right time? How much? What should I be doing? Right. And I go about it as kind of how I feel for the most part. There's some days where I'm like, man, I feel like I could move a lot of weight. And then I go try and move a lot of weight and I can't. It's so weird because the brain and the conscious mind says, hey, I can do this, but I can't when I physically try and do it. And so I'll adjust during the workout. It's always adjusting during the workout. If I feel like I'm good, I can try doing a one rep max. If I'm like, there's no way I can get this off my chest or whatever, I go down to more volume work and I'll go to a lower weight and I'll go more reps.
So it's not set in stone. It can vary on how you're feeling.
You can hurt yourself being set in stone, trying to do something that your body's not ready for. That's the one most important thing is injuries occur when egos come about, and you've got to be careful with that in your body. And you have to make sure that you're pivoting when something's not really working the way you want it to.
Good advice.
Only a couple more questions now. What first app you open in the morning?
Probably Snapchat.
Snapchat?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because of you're on the hunt, or is that
no, why? It's because that's how I communicate with someone. So, yeah.
Ah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Getting good. That streak up.
Good. Yeah, that
Rick, don't act like he knows what Snapchat is.
I've got no idea.
And then I'll go to Instagram, YouTube. I'll check out my YouTube page, and that's what kind of how it goes.
Are you into analytics yet of your YouTube? Do you look at all that stuff, your views and subscribers? Yeah, it's addictive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome. It is addictive, and it's a lot of fun trying to tailor the content to the people and what they want. It's definitely a lot of fun. And that's one of the things for me, and I'm going to get into a little bit of detail here. That's one of the reasons why I've kind of slowed down in conversations with, you know, people on the tour. It's because I want to be able to give my side of the story as genuine as possible, whereas getting someone to manipulate some of my words and produce their content can create clicks and likes for them, which is great, but it puts me in a light that I'm like, whoa, that's not me, man. I mean, I want to show you guys who I truly am. So YouTube's been a great avenue for me to connect to my fans and tell the right story. So it's been awesome.
Well, if you can give us some tips for distance, Bryson.
Yeah.
We'll give you a few little tips for YouTube in exchange.
Perfect. I appreciate that. I need some help.
If you've got any questions for us, let us know.
Yeah, appreciate
you can email that. You can email us.
No, but that's the thing, though. Like, genuinely, you've done a really good job with it, because I think one of the first videos I watched of yours was, like, I think it's the most viewed, was the day in the life video, where you literally went about a day in the life. Yeah. And, like, obviously, it's great when you watch the PGA Tour, the European Tour, when, you know, the athletes give an interview post-round. But you don't see much character. Like, you can't, people say, oh yeah, I got a bogey on 9, but birdie on 10, whatever. But when you can see someone's life and what they're actually up to, it does make you feel so much more, like, connected and actually, likeable, not in a sense that people aren't likeable, but it's hard to grow towards a golfer without knowing much about them. But that's what YouTube obviously gives you, that platform to just be yourself and tell your story.
1,000%. And I wish I could do more of those. I mean, people keep asking me to do them, and I'm like, I wish I could. I kind of got a little tap on the wrist because I did that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm.
Showing too much. Well, just in case the listeners didn't know, Bryson, you obviously have a YouTube channel. It's been going, what, about a year?
Just less than under that? A year. Just under a year, yeah.
And you're obviously killing it on there.
235,000 subs last time I checked.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, we're growing, and, you know, for me, it's, again, this isn't where I make my money. It's not what it's about one bit. It's just an opportunity for me to showcase my personality and character in a different light from what people have seen on Golf Channel, what people have seen on the PGA Tour. It's tough to be fully transparent in the way you want to sometimes on tour. So
yeah. I must admit, I'm an avid watcher. I feel like I've become to know you a lot more through YouTube channel, your social media.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for not only yourself, but obviously your whole brand. I mean, it's huge.
Absolutely.
So yeah, people listening, people watching, make sure you go and check out Bryson's YouTube channel. We'll link it below.
Yes. Tough one for you here. It might not be a tough one. Win the Masters or the Open, and by the Open, I mean the British Open. Which one?
I would have to say the Masters for me, just because growing up, watching Tiger and do what he did in 97. I mean, I was only like 5 at the time, but I remember that. And then, you know, what he's just consecutively done. That's kind of really what inspired me. Now, I will say, when he won, was it in 2006, the Open? Was it 2006 he won Tiger?
Hoylake
with his irons off the tee. That was really inspirational as well. Mm. So it's difficult, but I mean, I've always grown up. The Masters has kind of been the thing for me, just being an American. It's kind of what they do.
Yeah. I do, honestly, all every European we've asked, or certainly guys from the UK, have all said the Open, and majority of the US guys say the Masters. And, and it makes sense, because it's what you've grown up with. Like, we have, certainly back in the day, we used to have the Open on normal TV. So you didn't have to pay extra for it. You could watch it on normal TV. And it was almost something quite nostalgic about it, really. Yeah. And I think when you've grown up, and certainly because, again, if you're from the UK, you've probably been to the Open, etc. I'm not sure about how, what that's like in the US, because I know it's obviously a much more selected, to be a patron, it's not as easy to get to as it would be for an Open. But it's what people have grown up with, really.
For me, it was the Holy Land. For me, like just growing up, envisioning myself being on property at the Masters, because we couldn't get there. There was no chance to get there. It's a totally different vibe that I get. And it's like, wow, I want to be there. I want to do it. I want to win. You know, that's just kind of the way it works for Americans, I guess.
I think green would suit you as well, pal.
I'm not going to say much more.
I think you could carry that off.
Yeah, there is a room. There is a room. There's a special place for something. But, you know, we'll see.
Good.
I am. Me and Rick are. Our podcast audience know we absolutely love St Andrews, and we've been fortunate this last 6 months to go a number of times. We said last time we were there, we cannot wait to see you around the old course.
Yeah.
Because
I've got some questions on that.
It is obviously in parts wide open. There's a lot of room to miss with your speed, your distance. I can't wait to see what you can do around there. Have you played it before, the old course?
I have not. So this would be my first time. And I'm super excited. Everybody tells me that, and I don't want to hype it up, but people said that about Caves Valley as well. I never played Caves Valley. And like, oh, this golf course is perfect for you, and went out and played pretty well there. So hopefully I have the same feelings going into St. Andrews. And, you know, for me, it's always been an honor to play amazing golf courses, and this is one I haven't played. You know, I've been to Australia. I've played Royal Melbourne and golf courses like that, but never St. Andrews, the home of golf. And to be able to play there, play a game maybe a little differently than what has been seen there before, could be fun. I'm not trying to disrespect the game of golf one bit. That's not my goal. My intent is to get the ball and the least amount of shots into the hole. And that's always what it's been. As much as people think it's a bomb and gouge thing, it's like, no, I still love the heritage of the game of golf. That's why I wore the cap and wear the cap as well for Ben Hogan, Payne Stewart, and just the heritage of the game. And I really appreciate that. And that's what I've tried to show as much as possible through these past couple of years. As much as I do like hitting it far, I still try and show respect. And hey, you got to putt well, you got to chip well. Mm-hmm. And to win the US Open in 2020, I had to putt really well and had to wedge it really well around the greens. And there's no doubt about it. I'm not ever going to for one bit say it was my driving that won me that tournament. You know, and so that's the thing that people don't realize. Yes, it can be very beneficial. But when you're going to those speeds, you can miss it quite a bit offline. And that could be very detrimental as well if you're not hitting it straight.
Of course.
So there's a huge balance there, but I love being an entertainer. I love showing a different side of myself, and I love inspiring kids that if they really want to make a difference or a change in the world, in their lives, they can if they work hard enough. And that was my whole message in changing my body, changing my game, delivering a different product to the game of golf, and hopefully growing the sport in that way.
Well, that was one. This is actually one. We've got one more little question which we'll come to in a moment, but that was one thing I looked into, because obviously everybody knows the story that you gained a hell of a lot of distance, and I pulled up some stats, so I think these are correct, 'cause off the PGA website. But in 2019, you were tied 34th in driving distance at 302. So you weren't short. I think sometimes people think that you were a short hitter before, but that to me isn't a short hitter. Like, you were tied 34. Then in 2020, you went to first in driving distance at 322. So you gained 20 yards, and that saw obviously your score average drop as well. You went down from 70.14 to 69.24, so pretty much a shot, which is incredible. But there was, and this frustrated me at the time, and I want to hear your opinion on this obviously, but there was some kind of negativity around you gaining distance, which I couldn't fathom. If somebody spent a year or 6 months working on the putting and improved the putting strokes gained, people would applaud them for it. But yet people seem to, in the media, sometimes hate on you for doing that, and I personally don't understand it. How did that make you feel? Did it get you down? Did it piss you off, or did it motivate you even more?
I mean, there are times where it's definitely difficult to I guess take it. That's also why I started my own YouTube channel. I mean, down the road, it's been a little bit, right? To 2021 is when I started doing that, but I tried to start producing some of my own content more, and control a bit of the narrative, because it was getting out of hand. It has gotten out of hand for no reason. And again, I get this world's about clicks and likes. you know, and that's where I've had, I've dove down into this world, and it's been a little interesting for me to understand, you know, I don't want to do clickbaity material, but I also want to showcase very intelligent ideas and thoughts, deliver it to the public as much as I possibly can while producing cool, fun content. Right. So it's this huge balance I'm trying to have in doing this. And that's a part of why, you know, I created along with Hogan and Martin Borgmeyer and Hudson Moulton Regency. We wanted to create a cool content group and whatnot, but going back to, you know, all the criticism and whatnot in regards to getting length. Yeah. There were times where it was like, look, I'm just trying to play the best golf I can possibly play. And if it's me hitting it farther, great. If it's me not hitting it farther because I pivot down the road because I find out it doesn't work for me, great. It doesn't matter. I don't really care what it is, what the final end result is. The final end result is me wanting to be number one in the world. Like, that's my full goal, is to do that. And however I get there, whether it's being the farthest on tour, being the shortest on tour, I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's whatever it is that's going to work. And I'm still vetting out this process, seeing if it's possible. Because there may come a point in time where it's like, this length isn't doing as much as I thought it could. And, you know, the technology just isn't there and we can't do anything about it for years to come. I don't think that's the case. I really think that there is possibility moving forward with the drivers that we're developing to create a driver that goes straight at 200 mile an hour ball speed. But needless to say, it was difficult in 2020 and one that you have to learn. You really have to grow as a person to be able to stomach a lot of what people are saying to you. And that's just life now. There's a lot of cancel culture thought out there, and I understand it. And it's one of those things that for me, we all as professionals in our own right have to be conscious of it and respectful of it and continue to move in a direction that you think is positive for yourself. You know, for me, it's trying to grow the game of golf.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got some follow-up questions with that because I'd love to hear it from you again, because I've kind of heard it. I don't think I've ever heard you particularly say it, but obviously with all criticism and things you were getting particularly last year,
yeah.
You mentioned you were looking at potentially quitting.
Oh, yeah. Like,
what's the truth in that? Explain.
Yeah. I mean, this was like around FedEx St. Jude time where just people were just going, I mean, I couldn't say a thing right. There was nothing I could do. Right. And, you know, at a certain point in time, you just look at it and you're like, I'm well off. I mean, golf for me isn't about money anymore. I really don't care about that. I just have lost the love for playing the game of golf because there's so many people that are just going against me and they don't want to, they like seeing me down. They like knocking me down. And it's like, you know what? I don't need that. There's no reason to keep going on. I can go do VC work and be completely content and do really, really well for the world. There's no need to keep going down this road. And then I had a friend, Chris Pratt. I just gave him a call, and he's been a good, great friend of mine for a couple of years. And I met him at Riviera a couple of years ago before the pandemic. And he was awesome. The first time I met him, we just kept in touch ever since and just had a conversation with him. And he was like, dude, like, I get criticism and hate every single day for the movies I create. But the movies that I create and the characters that I am in those movies do not define me. What defines me is the person I am around my family, back at home, you know, influencing the world in a positive way when I'm back at home, taking care of my own life behind closed doors. That's really what matters. They're going to display you as this character out there, whatever way they want to. And you really can't do much to change it ever, because it is what it is. People have these own ideas and mindsets of who this person is, and they're going to create it. And this is the person that he is. And so he told me, he's like, you got to play that fictional character in the best way possible, because that is a fictional character. That's not really you. He says, yeah, you can produce your own content on YouTube and create what you want and show them what you want as well. Cause that is you on YouTube. Right. But people that are writing stuff, saying stuff and whatever, they have a vision of who you are in your head. And that's not really going to change unless you keep playing that game, I guess, in the best way possible over the course of time. It's going to take a long time for that to change, but you got to play the fictional character and you got to decide if you want to play it. If you feel like you're a good enough character to play that in the way people think you are and kind of mold that into the way you want, then do it. But if you aren't ready for that, you don't want to do it, you aren't ready to take up that task, then go live a family life and call it a day. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was
do you think though in the last, sorry, go on.
No, no. And I just thought to myself, that's really great advice. And, you know, I took it on for that last part of the year where I was playing a bit of, not that I was fake at all. I mean, my high moments were really good and I loved it. And I expressed great emotion, but the low moments, there were times where it was really difficult and I had to play a different person than what I was actually feeling. You know, people always talk about, you got to show your good side when you're down. And sometimes when you're really down, it's tough to show a good side, right? And that's everybody in general. And so learning to mature through that process and saying, you know what, I can be a different person, like a good person when I'm really down, was something that actually helped me in my character and my personality that will carry over into the rest of my life forever. And it's a lot of thanks to Chris and him helping me understand that. So that was kind of a character building
I guess.
Yeah, no, it was a total character building thing. And not very many people at 27 go through something like that. I mean, you know, you got top CEOs that are 45, 50, right? And they're just starting to go through things like that. Whereas you got a 27-year-old and you're like, whoa.
But are top CEOs going through that? Like, they're not in the public eye like you are.
True.
You know, you are in the public eye. I honestly think right now, we've said it a few times, like, bar the Tiger hype, you are the biggest hype in golf.
Yeah.
And as much as that's sometimes hard to take, you bring the most excitement, you bring the most topics, and you're right, you bring clicks, you bring likes to videos, media, whatever it may be. That does come with some nasty kind of words on the back of that as well.
Oh, yeah.
What do you feel's changed then in this kind of last 12 months then? Because, I mean, are you still experiencing the same emotions, or do you feel like you're over that now, or has people's perception changed of you?
Yeah, I hope people's perception has changed of me. I think I've grown as a person, and I've been able to, I guess you could say, sectionalize and understand people a little bit better, understand where they're coming from, and go, you know what, even though I was saying stuff, it doesn't affect me one bit. Obviously, with the stuff last year, all leading up to the match and everything, that whole stuff was trying to be like, look, this is just its own thing, and we're going to keep moving on and going on in the best way possible. So it's a lot of character building, a lot of learning for me, and it takes time to develop that, man. No human being can take that much scrutiny. And everybody, look, Tiger had more scrutiny than me, 1,000%. Had it way more difficult, and the way he handled it was his own way. I've tried to tackle it in a way that is more, hey, I'm going to be more open now. This is me. Yeah. This is actually me. You know, people think that, you know, because maybe I don't do media interviews, I'm more closed off. You guys can go right to my YouTube channel and see exactly who I am. Mm-hmm. Me talking to you guys, you can see exactly who I am. And that's the one thing that's so difficult sometimes, is to get people to say, just take a minute, take a few minutes and just watch, because maybe things will change or be a little bit different. Am I a perfect person? No, nobody is, right? And
nobody is.
I struggle with the daily frustrations of, man, this isn't working. What the heck's going on? You know, couple curse words here and there, and that's just, it just is what it is, right? We're all human beings. And I think that's the most important part, is that if people can see that, maybe they can have a little more resemblance toward that, and they can understand what's going on, a little empathy and whatnot, and vice versa. Like, they can say all day long, man, you're making so much money playing golf, but it's not about money for me or a lot of the top players out here. It's about producing an amazing product of entertainment and trying to win, just the competitive nature of winning. Right. And so that's the tough part for people to get. Sometimes it's like, you're making so much money, da, 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 da. And it's like, okay, I understand that. And I'm super grateful. I'm super blessed. I love every minute of that. There's no issue whatsoever when we're talking about that. But sometimes from an emotional state or a human being state, that's more important than money. And so when people are doing that, you got to realize, like, put the money aside, talk about the human being for just a second. And I think that's really important that people don't necessarily get sometimes.
If you could touch on, where do you feel like the most unfair scrutiny, is that the right word?
Scrutiny.
Was based on? What was like the one thing that you were experiencing, you were like, no, that's not fair, that's not right?
Are you talking about me in regards to like last year or something?
Just over the last 12 months.
Yeah, example. I mean,
is the one thing that now, with an opportunity to go, you know, I get this said about me, but it's not true.
Oh, I mean, I would say for the most part, anything and everything that anybody said from a scrutiny perspective, whether I'm hard to work with, whether I'm, I don't even know what type of scrutiny people said that I am, that I'm not. Other than being a demanding worker, I personally know that I treat the people around me, sometimes I'm pretty difficult. And the reason why I'm difficult is because I expect a lot. Doesn't mean that I'm disrespectful all the time. Doesn't mean that I'm, hard to work for, because the people that are around me are ones that want to be around me. And that's the thing that people don't realize. It's not necessarily a money thing. It's more of, I want to help this kid get to number one in the world. And, you know, you got a guy like Connor, who's been next to me for the past year and a half, and we've had tough moments, but this dude is stuck right next to me. And he's like, dude, I love you, man. Like, this is not about money. It's helping you to be the best you can possibly be. And as tough as people think I can be on the people that are around me sometimes, it's not necessarily true. I mean, I do so many things outside of just what you see there in public, behind the scenes, than what people realize. They have no clue. And I'm not willing to disclose that either, because it's,
no, of course,
a lot of it's financial. A lot of it's putting him in places where he's able to be successful, or other people are able to be successful because of more opportunities now. I mean, there's a lot behind the scenes that goes on that people don't necessarily see or understand. And it's tough when you see a face value thing and you get frustrated so much. It's just like you getting frustrated with somebody that you're working with. You're like, no, I want it to be this way. Can we do this way? It's very, but
I'm joking.
No, but you hear me out on that. Like everybody, whenever, no matter who it is, when you're working with somebody, sometimes there are frustrating moments. Then there are times where it's amazing moments. Right. And so how you deal with that, I've learned to have better style points with it. If you can say, Chris Como brought it up. He made a great point to me a couple of years ago. He was like, the way you go about things is very, very important too. And albeit we're not all perfect, to get to an end result, it's really cool if you do it, but there's style points in the way you do it. Mm. And that's something that I've learned over the course of time, and how I've been dealing with people, learning how to do that better is something that has gotten a lot better. One, and two, I've always cared about being mutually beneficial. I really want it to be mutually beneficial whenever I'm working with someone, or somebody's working for me, or vice versa. And I think that's why, you know, you can see I've been with my agent for so long. He's unbelievable. Brett is the man. Connor's been with me. And then Tim, I mean, I love Tim to death. I worked with him for a long, long time. Struggled to find a good caddy at first. Tim was unbelievable. And now Brian's working for me. He's unbelievable as well. You know, people can say all that they want in regards to the caddy situation. There was a lot more going on at that point in time than I'm willing to disclose behind the scenes. And I've said it before. I respect him. We have mutual respect for each other. I talked to him numerous times. I mean, I texted him the other day when he was with Svensson in Hawaii. He had a chance to win. I texted him like, hey, go get him, you know, like no issues at all. And that's the thing that I wish people could see in the background. But and I don't want to brag about it. I'm not like trying to brag about it one bit. It's just one of those things I wish people understood more of a real life situation of who I am.
This is very, very different, but like, it's frustrating. When people think they know you or what you do and they don't, and we, again, very different, but we sit a little bit in the content that we make. People might scrutinize how Rick has reviewed a golf product or whatever it might be, and they don't know what has gone on behind the scenes. Yeah. And you know it shouldn't frustrate you, but people's opinions can get you down, can't they?
You know what I was just, 100%. You know what I was just almost comparing it to then? Is a relationship.
It is.
Any relationship. Now, I've been with my wife now for 14 years, nearly 15 years. And there's obviously great times. There's obviously some worse times where you argue, whatever it may be. Now, you'd like to think in a private relationship, those bad times happen behind closed doors. Yeah. Nobody gets to see them.
Yep.
And as the good times, nobody wants to see. No. Nobody wants to see that. But it happens behind closed doors. Either way, I think having any relationship in the public eye is very, very difficult. Mm. Right. I want to pick up a bit of an upbeat tone now. I feel like we went deep there, Bryce.
It was nice.
Which I think people will appreciate. At the moment, as Guy mentioned there, your distance now is 322.7 yards. You are the longest player on the PGA Tour. First question, did you ever expect that when you were kind of growing up? Did you ever expect to be the number one longest player?
No, I was wanting to be like Colin Morikawa. I wanted to have the best strokes gained approach to green. That was always my goal.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty awesome with his irons.
It's unbelievable. It's impressive to see. One that I'm even jealous of.
And then my next question is, where, honestly, right now, let's give it a 5-year window. Where do you reckon, and it, whether it's you, whether it's somebody else, what distance do you think will be the number one longest driver in 5 years?
340.
And will it be you?
340, 345. And it probably won't be me.
So another 20 yards.
Yeah.
Why will it not be you? Who do you think it could be? Somebody that you know? Or
There's numerous guys that have my speed, whether it's Cameron Champ, Wilco, Neenan Barr, or whoever. They're going to learn to have 2,000 spin on a 195-mile-an-hour ball speed driver, and that's a 340 drive.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even have to be Kyle. Your mate Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle, shoot. If he gets out here too, I mean, yeah, he'll be the longest by a long shot. And if he's out here, he'll be probably 350, 360.
Wow.
That'll probably be his average.
How is Kyle Berkshire so fast? Obviously, for those listening, he's the world long drive champion. Like, he's obviously, what is he, like 6'2 or something? He's like not a small guy, but he's not like, he doesn't look super built.
He's not super built either. I mean, again, being super strong like a bodybuilder doesn't mean you're going to necessarily swing it fast. It doesn't one bit. No. So you have to train the speed to create speed to this small window right here. Yeah, you're building it up, and then all of a sudden, whoa, you accelerate it really fast. Because you're trying to be fast up here, you lose all this energy up at the top. Anyway, it's about timing. And he's learned to add the speed at the right moment in time with his frame. He is possibly the best at expressing the best acceleration profile for any human being in the game of golf. So what I mean by that is that he's able to accelerate the club the best in the world with his body frame. He's probably maxing his body out. He's close to maxing his body out. Whereas a guy like me, I'm a little bit stronger than him in certain areas.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He may be, I think he's fractionally stronger than me in deadlift. But I still got a lot more room to go, but I have to hit it straight. So I put a lot of restraints on my golf swing. So that's why I'm not always over 200 and if I want to get over 200, I can get over 200 any day of the week. But it's more of, okay, I got to play golf with equipment that if I hit it all over the face, may not necessarily work yet. We're testing actually today, funny enough. Yesterday was the first day where I saw some light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, oh, okay, this is different. I could hit it a lot of different places on the face and have it work. And we're doing some more research today on the driving range. We've got some cool stuff in the trailer that not yet going to be unveiled, but it's helping me understand what needs to happen for a ball to go straight, being able to be hit everywhere on the face.
Are you having quite a big say in this now moving forward?
Say again?
Are you having quite a big say in this, working with, let's say, Cobra? Are they taking your input? Are you heavily involved in some of this production?
There's definitely a reason why I wanted to bring Kyle on board and Cobra wanted to bring Kyle on board. And there's definitely a reason why I said certain things last year that I shouldn't have said. If you can read between the lines there. But that's a positive thing. Like, we've moved past that. We're in a place where it's really solid, really, you know, great. And I don't want that to be like a bullet point, by the way, guys. I just want it to be like, look, we were at a moment where we were at crossroads and we figured that out. And now we're moving forward and we're in a place where next year. So we have the LTDX, obviously, came out this year, which is an unbelievable driver. And then we've done a long drive face for it. So it's been very helpful for me. I'm going to be using it this week and moving forward. But I'm telling you, there's something special coming next year. There's something like, yeah, we've been working on this for a while. And
the Bryson. The Brysonator.
No. It's a really cool name, but I can't disclose anything or anything. But this driver is a precursor to what's coming next.
Does that ever, when an athlete like yourself has such an impact into a product, which obviously you are doing, do you ever kind of get a bit pissed that you can't be using it almost like next week when you know how good it's going to be? Or does it almost just excite you? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the guy, the ice cream handle, he's scooping the ice cream out on the street and he puts it on and he gives the guy the cone and he pulls it out and he's like, he's throwing it around.
I've seen that.
That's exactly what I feel like happens with new products.
Like, here's a new driver. Oh, you can't have it yet, though. Okay, here's a new driver, but you can't have it yet. Yeah, yeah, I get that. Is another question, again, on equipment. Obviously, I don't think you were the first ever, in fact, I know you weren't, with one-length irons. There was players before you, but you obviously made it very popular. Mm-hmm. Do you think you're always going to use one length?
Yeah, so anybody can. I personally think that it's a great way to play the game of golf. Doesn't mean it's for everybody. I personally think anyone can use it still. And you don't have to swing like me to be able to use one length. Everybody for the longest time thought, oh, you got to be on the single plane thing to swing the, you know, one length irons. Those are two completely different, you know, accomplishments, I guess you could say, or uses. You can swing on a single plane with variable length clubs. And you can swing on a single plane with one length clubs. And you cannot swing on one plane with one length clubs and the alternative as well, right? Everybody swings with variable length clubs of different planes. So what I mean by that is it's not mutually exclusive to have one length and single plane. But you can have one length and swing any way you want.
Do you still categorize yourself as a single plane swinger? Because your swing has changed a lot.
No. Yeah, it's definitely different now.
Because you're nowhere near as, you don't have your hand. You don't have your hands anywhere near as up right now at setup, do you?
No, it's for speed purposes. That's been a development of my theory in the game of golf. I had a theory when I was 15, swinging on one plane would make it a lot easier, and it did help me for a long time. And I got to a place where I started to understand the biomechanics a little bit more. And my eyes opened up quite a bit in relation to that the golf swing is driven by how movable your body is and where your wrists are aligned and where your elbows align, where your shoulders align, how it's dynamically moving through impact, and how to take some variables out that are not that important for speed but help a lot with alignment, and then add the speed components where I can and the body motion. I don't know if that makes any sense whatsoever, but
it's gone
more to a body approach compared to like a swing plane approach.
Obviously, when you first hit the scenes and you were you were kind of called the mad scientist of golf, right? It was all very new, you know. Because what's your degree in it? Something crazy in it, your degree?
So physics.
Has it got a long description for it, or is it just physics?
No, it was just a physics major, yeah.
All right, maybe I read something wrong. When you kind of hit the scene, it felt like everything was unbelievably calculated.
Yeah, it still is, for the most part.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. When you come to your driving, to the untrained eye, or maybe to the or to people who aren't in your inner circle, it looks a little bit more like barbaric in the way that you're getting speed. Is that the case, or are you still unbelievably kind of scientific in your approach to actually gaining more distance?
From an accuracy perspective, I'm always very scientific in regards to how I'm moving my body, and then I'm allowing certain speed factors to just go as fast as they want. And sometimes that misaligns some of the body alignments, but it is very calculated. Still, when I'm thinking about it, I'm definitely thinking about but it's also about what feels good. So I have a theory in my head about like where the body should be aligned. And then if it doesn't feel good, I'm not going to keep doing that. It's going to just be decorative to the process. So I go to something that is locked in or whatever I do to develop it. And I try and produce as much speed off of that locked in nature.
And would you ever sacrifice that then locked in if you could unlock more speed?
Yes, but then I eventually go back to locking it down and then trying to get more speed again. Mm. So it's this ebb and flow of it gets a little loose and then I come back to now I've got a little more in tune. And then, you know, the next couple of weeks is probably going to go more speed. So it's this flowing nature of calculation. It's a educated process of flow and speed to accuracy.
What's the difference then now? Say you're on a tight par four and you're hitting driver. What would your club head speed be then compared to when you're kind of going all at it on the range in a range?
15 miles an hour different.
So what are you hitting on the course, like 130?
130 to 133. And then if I'm really going at it, I can get it upwards of 140. And then if I've had enough golf balls, I can get it to 145, 147.
Wow. And that's with a 45 inch or?
No, so you have to eventually change it to go to the longer club to get even more speed. But I can get a 46-inch is what I'm playing right now. I can get a 46-inch up to 140, 142 if I'm going out on the range, which I probably will do today.
Is that the limit now, isn't it, 46 on tour?
Yeah.
Or is it soon to
be introduced? They
took it away. That's the limit right now?
Yeah, on the PGA Tour, yeah.
I got a sense of a little eye roll there.
Is not anything by it. Not at all.
Do you think it's the right thing or wrong thing to do?
Look, right or wrong, I don't think you can ever say something's right or wrong because it's all up for conversation, right? Any sports rules that are made are all very arbitrary and they just are what they are. Whether I think it's positive for the game of golf, I think they aren't necessarily looking at golfers that are trying to get more distance and they can't just because, you know, they aren't necessarily, they're either handicapped, they've got something wrong with them, or they're super tall, right? They're 7 foot tall. Like, you're handicapping the game of golf when you set rules and limitations, not really thinking of the full spectrum of things. You know, I think they do have an amendment or something, or a small subcategory that if you are 7 foot and you do need longer clubs, you can go past 46 or 46 and so 46.2, I think, is the
and that's length. That's on tour.
Yeah, on tour and tour. And so, you know, then they nix the green books as well, or the players nix the green books, which, you know, is one of those things that, okay, I get it. But, you know, at a certain point in time, you start feeling like, okay, this is a little weird. I mean, face on, my mechanical compass, the green reading materials, length of driver. I mean,
when they start doing flat caps, you know,
the band on a Sunday.
We had Phil Kenyon on the podcast a few weeks ago, and obviously his take on the greens books
wasn't
particularly happy. And
he
and
wasn't
also,
happy.
No. And also the spirit level. Is it something you can't use a spirit level now on the greens?
So you can't use any level or anything to measure the ground. You can use your feet and you can write it down in a book. You know, it's a bit unfortunate. They took away a process of mine that I've been developing for 13 years and some intellectual property with it. So it's kind of tough on my end.
Yeah,
but
just a bit.
Yeah, it's a little
frustrating.
And it's like, look, I get it. They're trying to go back to more of a look at it with your eyes and feel it with your feet sort of mentality. But there's a huge skill set to somebody learning how to utilize the green books to another level. And, you know, they're trying to make it more confidence level driven. Like, we're trying to take away confidence. So, you know, it's a little more, but then you had the lowest scoring the past couple of weeks. It's like
in Hawaii,
what are we doing? How much is the green books really helping? In 2003 to this year's stats, the strokes gained were actually worse. And there's other reasons for that, but it's like, it's not helping. And so by taking out certain players' ability to play the game of golf in the way they learned how to play, I learned this, Rick, when I was 13, 14, 15.
Yeah.
And I've grown up with the system. That's how I play golf. You know, that's how a lot of kids have learned how to play golf. That's how a lot of kids have trained themselves to putt well. That's just the way they do it. And by taking it out, you're just the ability for kids to use their brain. It's not like, you know, you take the guy that's 6'10", last week that played and say, hey, we're going to take 2 inches off of you because you're too tall. Well, that's kind of what you're doing with my brain and my brain's ability to figure a situation out. You know, one of my greatest assets in my body is problem solving, and my brain is problem solving. And I think that by taking that away, it's a little, I don't want to say that word, but you know, it can be, it can push somebody in the wrong direction really, really quickly.
Sometimes saying nothing in that moment is powerful enough. I think that was perfect. Well, we've got a friend of ours who's the tallest golfer in the world. He's 7'7.5".
Oh my gosh.
Okay. He's called Paul Sturges. He's called Tall Paul. Okay.
That's amazing.
And he, believe it or not, he is still limited to only a 48-inch driver.
Wow.
And he honestly, it looks like
so
a,
small.
It looks like a kid's club when he's hitting it.
That's so unfortunate.
Because I just feel like
that's just not inclusive. And that's the tough part. You have somebody that can't control it. Like, they can't control my brain. I just developed it, and this is the way I think, and this is the way I do things. And it's just they're just not being inclusive with that. It's kind of frustrating. But I understand. I understand to some level, you know, that's a very, very unnormal thing to have, right? 7'7" golfer, right? And I get it. But you know, you want somebody like that to play the game, and you know, why not? Why not let him play something that's comfortable for his height, right? Yeah. Instead of him hurting their back and whatnot and all that. I mean, there's no harm, no foul, especially on the amateur level. If he's a professional. Maybe let's have a conversation about it and go like, okay, that's fair. You know, let's find something, let's find a compromise. And that's the frustrating part, is that there was really no compromise in this. It wasn't, in regards to the greens books or length. It was just, this is what we're doing, call it a day. And it's like, guys, you have a few of the best players in the world that are going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Can we talk to you about it? Can we like try and figure out a solution and a compromise? No.
Ah, yeah, that's not. You need a bit of open. You need a bit of dialogue there, right?
Sure. Especially when you're trying to make it work for everybody.
You touched on before how you want to be number one golfer in the world.
Yeah.
As do I.
as did 11-year-old Ricky Shields, but not anymore. What also is on that tick list? What are your career goals right now?
Well, career Grand Slam is a huge deal for me. And then I want to get to 20 wins at least on the PGA Tour.
You're currently on 8, is it?
Yeah, I'm in 8. So, got a ways to go.
That's pretty good.
But it's not terrible, but it's not. I mean, there's a year. 2018 was when I was hitting it the best of my life. Just dead straight. You know, I had my golf swing really dialed in. Putting was really good. And I gave myself a lot of chances to win. And I did win.
Yeah.
But the next year, I kind of lost my golf swing a little bit, and I couldn't figure it out. And that's when later that year, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try and hit it farther, because I think hitting it farther will give me a better opportunity. And it did. I won a couple more times. You know, and I gave myself a lot of chances last year as well. Now, this year, I feel like I have that speed. We're getting to a place where the driver is working in a really good way. And then my putting has gotten back to its level in 2018. I figured something out at, this off season. And so I putted pretty well at Kapalua. I feel like, even though I didn't have any greens books or whatnot, I was rolling it well. So it's going to take some time for me to adjust and learn how to use my eyes again a little bit more. I was still using my eyes. It was not like, but just to go back to that real quick.
You weren't blindfolded.
Everybody thinks I was using just all math to do putting. No, I mean, there's spike marks, there's bumps, there's a bunch of different stuff on the green. You got to look and you got to be like, my intuition's telling me it's not this way. And you got to go with your gut at the end of the day. So there's a lot of feel still in play, you know, and I, at certain times, lost a lot of confidence because of what the greens book said, because the greens books aren't always right.
Right.
That's where it's like, it's a huge skill set. You got to learn to be able to utilize that greens book. And that's where it's frustrating when people don't use it. They're like, oh, it should be gone. Well, you've never tried it. You've never used it. And you don't understand its frailties and faults. And it's downfalls, it's pitfalls. And that's kind of the tough part for me. Anyway, I don't know why I went back on that rant. That's just a whole nother.
It's all right. So that's career goals. What's 2022 goals?
Winning a major and winning a few times on tour. Definitely. Giving myself plenty of opportunities on the back nine of tournaments to win a golf tournament to close it out.
What world ranking will Bryson DeChambeau be at the end of 2022?
Will I be? Oh, man. I don't even know. I hope top five, and I very much so hope number one in the world, but that's going to take a couple wins and playing really well this year.
We touched on it slightly earlier. St. Andrews, obviously this year, home of golf, the Open, 150th. Yeah. It's going to be, certainly over here in the UK, I don't know of a single Open that's had more buzz ever.
No, this one feels different. I think hopefully with Tiger going to be there as well, and just the infrastructure around St. Andrews, it's going to be amazing.
And I just think at the moment, when you look at the best players in the world, I mean, you'll know, there's any one of the top 50, any one of the top 100 can go and have a week at the Open.
Yeah. Yep.
And when you look at the top 10, you look at the field and how well everyone's been playing recently, you just think, oh my goodness. So I've got a question for you. What's your strategy?
Ooh.
Well, my strategy is going to depend on the weather, first off. You know, it's a golf course where maybe a lot of irons off the tee is the play. I don't know. Maybe it is hitting it really far and bombing up next to the greens and having a great wedge game. There's a couple ways I could play the golf course with the length, because sometimes people think about my driver is, oh, it gives them such an advantage. What really gives me an advantage is my irons, being able to hit an 8-iron 210 yards, being able to hit a 9-iron 195. A 6-iron 240 yards. So this is where, you know, the conversation of the strategy, what is my strategy? It's one going to depend on the weather, and conditions of the course and what I'm comfortable with as well. Two is what I'm comfortable with, you know, given my current game situation. So
you mentioned before, you've never played the golf course.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you know the golf course at all much?
Yeah, I played it on PGA Tour 2004 plenty.
When you shoot like 50 under for the whole tournament.
One of the big tips we had when we played is that miss left. If you're going to miss left. Yeah, left there's so much room. But with regards to the weather then, as a long hitter or the longest hitter, do you want it hard or soft? Because I'm guessing if the course is harder, the shorter guys get obviously so much more roll as well. So do you want it to be a little softer, or do you want it to be baked out where you can just be hitting irons off the tee and out driving people who are hitting driver or whatever?
Probably softer and then firm for the greens.
Mm-hmm. Because that's, you can fly in nice and high with like a 9-iron where others are hitting 5-irons or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really exciting. Will you get an opportunity before July to play it at all?
Probably not. I'm probably going to play the Scottish before the week before, get somewhat comfortable with link style golf, and then head over there. I'll try and play as much as I can, but you know, not much I can really do. With all the restrictions, it's kind of tough to go over there and you get over there early and play, and the timing, my schedule, all of that, pretty difficult. So
one thing we need to do, Bryce, if we can, certainly when you're next in Europe, is we did a video recently where Rick played with Tommy Fleetwood, and it was at a course called JCB, which is amazing. Obviously, stroke play, Tommy Fleetwood would destroy Rick.
Destroy me.
So Rick had a handicap of 10. So Rick started 10 under par. Tommy started level par, obviously.
Yeah.
And the match went right down to the wire. And on hole 18, they actually finished level.
And this is on a golf course. Again, over here in the UK, we don't get many golf courses upwards of 7,500 yards.
It's a beast.
This plays about 7,700. So I think on a normal golf course around the UK, 10 probably be too many shots. That would easily win.
Yeah.
But on a proper championship golf course. So I would love to get some guarantee next time you're over in the UK or our schedules collide, me versus you, I start 10 under.
Yes.
And you start level par.
For sure. That'd be fun.
Do you think you'll beat me still?
I would hope so.
Because even if, because on that particular day, it was very, very cold, very wet, very windy. It was in December here in the UK, so it wasn't particularly nice weather.
Yeah.
But I was even thinking, if it's in the summer, you're going to go around in probably 6 under, 5 under, around a kind of golf course, normal golf course. For me, around the golf course that's that long, I'm not getting that close to par. You know,
you're happy with 5 over.
I'd be shooting
really?
4 or 5 over. So that's why I think it's such an interesting match. Like I say, on a slightly shorter course, even at somewhere like St Andrews, I think it'd be much tighter, and I think 10 would be too many. But on a proper long golf course, I think that's one we've got to plan.
For sure. Definitely.
One thing you touched on then that interests me as well, we mentioned this kind of myself and Rick when we planned the podcast, was that you've gained so much distance with your driver, but you almost forget you've gained with iron as well, like you said before. Is that what you've honestly found as almost the best gain then? That whereas you might have been hitting 7 iron before, you're now hitting 9, for example. Yeah. Is that what you've really found it's helped?
Yeah, for example, 11 out here, I was playing yesterday. It was 219 yards to the pin, and I hit an 8 iron, and I landed on the front edge and just rolled it up. It was pretty calm conditions. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, you got Tiger and all them back in the day hitting 5 iron, 4 irons. Right into it, and I'm just sitting in just a nice little 8 iron.
It's hard to say this, but do you recommend for amateurs they kind of look at the distance route, or do you think it's just too hard for amateur golfers to really try and gain distance and speed?
I would say be cautious with it, because it can really mess up the golf swing if you're not careful and thoughtful about it. There's a reason why there's really only been one person make this sort of change in a long time. I think maybe ever, and I'm not trying to hype myself up at one bit. It's just, it's not easy. And I'll tell you that the reason why it's so difficult is because one, you got to learn how to get stronger without getting injured. Two, you got to learn how to swing it faster without getting injured. Mm. Three, you got to learn how to, I would say, play golf without getting injured. Right.
Yeah.
And then four, you learn how to, I guess it's three, you got to learn to hit. I messed up. Hold up. One, get stronger without getting injured. Two, learn how to swing it faster. Three, learn how to hit it straighter without getting injured. That's a big deal. Even on three, trying to hit straight. And then four, learn how to play golf. There's four things you got to do in order to do it. And sometimes each one is its own, could be a year-long process. So it's not easy one bit. And I've expedited it through having intelligent people like Chris Como by my side, Greg Roscoff, MAT in Denver, getting stronger, and then having a caddy and a support group behind me. It's not been just this, oh, let's go hit it farther and let's see what happens. No. This has been very, very calculated, very difficult to do.
Here is a quick question. And I'm just going off on what we've talked about in the topic so far in the podcast. Do you get bored of talking about distance? Like, is it annoying? Because I'm guessing that's what a lot of people ask you, and I feel conscious we've asked you a few times about it today.
No, not at all. The moment that I'll start getting bored about distance in golf is the moment where I'm either, one, the best in the world and nobody can beat me, which is not ever going to happen. In regards to distance, I'm talking about, so like beating Kyle. Or two, I just don't have a love for the game anymore. So I'll never get bored about it.
Oh, that's good.
Do you ever feel like with that world of spending time with Kyle and Martin and really get into the kind of long drive, Does that ever become a little bit like where you almost think I'm getting too into this? I can see myself getting too bothered about long drive and actually the sport of long drive. Or can you happily... The reason I ask that, it's a silly analogy, but like over here, rugby is a big sport. Mm-hmm. And there's been problems before. I did about this when I was at university where like athletes have been injured. So they've trained in the gym more to get fit. And then suddenly they almost like the look of how they start to look, which actually isn't always beneficial to their sport. Aesthetic doesn't really matter in some sports too much. And I just wonder, did you ever find that you get almost too excited about the long drive, or are you okay to kind of get involved and then step back out again?
I can prioritize and sectionalize it in its own in its own right very well. I've learned how to do that. There are times where like I was like, whoa, okay, I'm getting too off of the act, because it's always a balance of power and accuracy, and I go between the two. And I'm like, okay, I'm going too much power right now, and I go, but I got to go back to accuracy because I got a tournament coming up in a week, so I'll hone it in and dial it all in as much as I can. And so it's this bounce back and forth between the two.
See, even the whole, I watched that video on your channel at one. It was like, not like a garage, but that guy had that huge facility where he had a long drive competition as well. I can't remember.
The OSPS, the
it was a few weeks before the World Long Drive, I think it was.
Yeah.
And like the community feel and the fact that you all seem to get on really well, I can imagine that being like a nice place to be, a nice environment as well.
It's one of the most comfortable places and the most inclusive places that I've ever been a part of from my perspective. You know, a lot of people initially thought that I was going to try and, you know, make it a show and a freak show, whatever. No, I wanted to grow it because it has the opportunity to grow the game of golf in a really cool way. And so when I went there, everybody was super amazing with me. There was no like, oh my gosh, he's going in there. What does he think he's doing? It was more of like, no, it brought me under their wing and said, we want to help you get as fast as you can because it's a super close, tight-knit community. 10, 15 years ago, it was not. It was egos, like, I'm way faster than you. And now it's more of, how can we all be the fastest we can possibly be? Like Martin and Kyle going against each other, even Justin James and Josh Koch. We're all trying to spur each other on to hit it as far as possible because we know together we're stronger than apart.
But they almost, as much as you're probably picking their brains about how to get speed, they're probably picking your brains because you can find the middle of the club face.
Yeah,
exactly. Like
they can't always do that, you know. So exactly. I think they've probably learned a lot from you as well.
Yep.
Because we've kept you super under wraps about being a guest on the podcast, we have put on our Facebook chat some quick fire questions, if you don't mind, from our audience.
Yep.
These are not vetted.
They're just now going
so
on.
You are going to get some random ones here, okay? Very quickly. Collab has asked, McDonald's or KFC?
McDonald's.
Easy. Another one, again, not vetting massively. When was the last time you went for a beer with Brooks?
Never.
How long does he think he can keep up 200 miles per hour ball speed before it takes a toll on his body?
I feel like I can do it for quite a few years. There's a senior division that the World Long Drive PLDA produces. The PLDA produces, and each year it's the Masters division. And Jeff Gavin, I believe, is his name. I might have got it wrong. Please, I need to double check that. But the guy who won had 215 mile an hour ball speed.
Wow.
At 55 or something like that. You can do it for a long time.
That is absolutely crazy. I've got another one here. Who is your favorite player to be paired with out on tour?
Ooh. I like personally Pat Perez. It's a lot of fun.
He just seems super like cool, relaxed.
He doesn't care. He just goes and has fun and kills it.
Another question. How many golf clubs do you own?
Oh my gosh. Own or have been given to me?
Well, you own them now.
Yes. I mean, a lot of them are with Cobra, but probably hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
And what do you think you've got the most of?
Has to be drivers, surely.
I have the most driver heads, for sure.
I feel like a lot of people, like putters, are a big collector's item as well.
Yeah, I'm a driver collector.
Question here from David Spencer. What degree lofts are your clubs? I'm guessing you know every degree of every club.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Everybody talks about me like loft jacking my clubs. And the problem with that is that when you start gaining a lot of speed, you start spinning the ball a lot. And so like with an 8-iron, if I spun my 8 iron to 8,000 RPMs, it wouldn't go farther than 180 to 90 yards because of the height and apex of it. So when I start swinging harder, the spin rate starts going up. So like now when I'm swinging it close to 108 miles an hour and with my irons, it goes upwards of like 9,000, 9,500 RPMs. So it doesn't go any farther just because there's more spin. So I have to take the loft down in order to get the proper distance gapping necessary for me. So my 50, so it goes 58, 52, 46, 41, pitching wedge is 41. That's super low. And then it goes 37, 9 iron, 30, I think 2.5, 8 iron, 7 iron is like 28, 6 iron is 24 or 23. 5 irons, 19, and then 4 irons, 16, because that's the lowest iron we can produce right now. They're trying to work on getting a 15, 14 degree loft of 4 iron.
I suppose it makes sense, though, because people know when you get the driver fit that someone who swings it really fast wouldn't typically have like a 12 degree driver. Obviously, they'd be down like an 8 or a 9. So it's no different with your irons, I guess.
And I've got a 4.5 degree driver pretty much.
Is that what's in the bag like tournament weeks?
Yeah, that's what I use because it spins at 22, 2500.
4.5 degrees, that's what you're playing with right now.
Yes.
Oh my God. It's like a putter.
You know what I'm actually quite surprised with those lofts that you were mentioning. I honestly expected like 41.23 degrees. Like I was like
it was 1.5, I think, in there somewhere.
32.5, I think.
But the machines only go to really tenths, an accuracy of a tenth. So
I've got a question. I think this would be a sick video for you. Okay. This is from Grant. How far can you hit a putter off the tee?
I saw that one.
Yeah, I got to
drive as a putter, really, with 4 degrees. Sure.
How far do you reckon you could hit it?
I got to get my arm lock putter that's longer so I can hit
it. You couldn't hit that. Let's say a normal 35-inch putter.
Okay, perfect. Yeah,
I think you've got to do one. Get an old one.
If I hit one good, I'd probably get it over 300, probably.
Oh, my. That's got to be a YouTube short.
Get it teed up, hit it up. Low spin. Amazing. Right, I've got one final thing. I feel like we've got on really well today.
Absolutely.
Do you think we've got on really well?
Yeah.
Good. I might ruin it.
Oh boy.
You could throw anything at me. I don't think I'd get...
Bryson, I'm your mate, so if Rick ruins it now, we're cool, okay?
I don't think I could live it down by my listeners and viewers if I didn't ask you a certain question.
Okay, I know what this is going to be.
I'm going to drink some vodka before I just... my hand's shaking.
Bryson is about to press end call any second now. So,
hey, guys, to be honest with you, like you guys have been awesome. I really don't care.
Oh, thank you.
You're not the only player, okay? But you seem to get the most stick for it.
Mm-hmm.
The four-letter word. Four.
Which one?
Four.
Wait, I'm confused.
Oh, this could be a great clip. You might have just summarized it. I'm saying you're not the only player to get accused of this, but sometimes maybe not always shouting four when they maybe should be shouting four if a golf ball's going towards somebody.
Four. Okay, F-O-R-E. Gotcha.
F-O-R-E.
No, you're fine. I'm totally fine.
Elaborate. Do you...
Yeah. No, people say, okay, that's one of the other ones. I didn't even think about it.
I think I've been guilty of this. I've definitely called you out on this a few times. But that's I'd love to, only because of what I see on social media, little clip. So please have your say.
So the big one was, I think, at FedEx St. Jude Classic, I think, when I hit it right. It didn't hit anybody, but it went past the bunkers and went into the crowd and went in the crowd, or just sort of short of the cart path. And the trouble with that is that the wind was off the right end of the wind, and I hit a shot that I flared up to the right, and I didn't think at all it would get there. And so most of the time when we hit shots, if we don't think it's going to get there, there's really no reason to say anything, and most guys don't on tour. Now, you could, because of how far I'm hitting it, every single shot say four. I could be like four every single shot. And sometimes that's actually potentially more harmful because people scatter and move and they walk into the direction of the golf ball. When I see a ball and it's close, but I don't think it's going to get to somewhere or whatnot, that's when I'm like, okay, that one, two, they can't hear me. They can't hear me because it's into the wind. I could yell as loud as I possibly wanted to yell and they would not be able to hear me. That's another thing. Now, it doesn't look as good. People think that I'm not being respectful at all. I don't care about patrons or people on the side. That's the farthest thing from the case. I've hit people before and it's been the worst possible feeling in the world. So don't ever think that, one, I don't care about fans or whatnot. Scottie Scheffler at the Ryder Cup hit one into someone, the left of six, at the Ryder Cup. And like, I was sitting there helping the guy was bleeding and everything. It's just an awful situation. You know, Brooks hit someone in the eye at the Ryder Cup.
Paris.
And someone's, yeah, at Paris. I mean, this happens. It's a part of the sport. And don't think for one bit that we don't feel terrible for it. I hit somebody back in 2017 in Louisiana over on the left. Sometimes it's impossible to do anything. The one time, though, that looks like I should be yelling for and it doesn't is sometimes the one where I get the most slack for it. And most of the time, it's because, one, I don't think it's going to get there. And two, if I'm yelling for every single time, it's not a good situation to other players that are on other holes. There's a lot of things going on in those moments as well. But the biggest thing for me that really is, I think hopefully eye-opening to people is that when it's into the wind, you can't yell loud enough. It's impossible.
People wouldn't hear you.
They would hear, and it's not quick enough. And if anything, if they scatter more because of it, yeah, that's a problem too. Now, if I miss it so far right that it's never going to hit anybody, there's nothing you can really do on that end either. Now, if it's going for someone, I see it's going for some people, I always yell for it. I mean, people clearly hear me all the time, but unfortunately, the broadcast, television, media, people that see it, they don't necessarily understand the situation. So the one was FedEx St. Jude. I did not think it was getting there, nor did it actually get there. It landed before them and rolled into the crowd. That was one of the other. Another one, I can't even remember off the top of my head. Please enlighten me because I can explain the situation if I remember the situation. Because for me, it's like that's so irrational that I don't even remember it for me in my head. If there's a moment where it's like, oh, I messed up, I will 100% own up to it. And I'm not afraid of doing that. I can't come off the top of my head and remember one of them other than that.
So it's almost more isolated incidences where you've explained it. Because if we've ever talked about it, a lot of people say, yeah, but nobody can hear it when it's 350 yards away. Where I would say they could hear it, but as you're explaining, if it's into wind, you might
impossible.
Not hear it. I get that. And that makes
downwind,
sense.
100% they can hear it.
So shouting it, yeah. I think it's just, for me, as growing up, and it's almost one of the first things we get taught as a golfer, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, it's one of the first
Same
things.
Same here, by the way.
And I just think, certainly from a few incidences which have probably been blown up on social media, it sometimes worries me about what that portrays to the younger golfer. Like, I would hate for a 12-year-old who is just your biggest fan kind of flicks on social media and goes, yeah, well, Dad, Bryson doesn't shout it. Do you know, and I think that's my only thing. I've got three young children, and you know, I'd like to think I'm bringing them up, and if they play golf, you'll teach them the right mannerisms, which, by the way, you carry yourself so well on the golf course. It's just those little isolated incidences, which, you know what, I'm glad I've asked you, and I'm glad you answered it so well. You know, I didn't know what to expect from that.
Yeah. But, and I would love to have another incidence, because I honestly don't remember, because my brain was like, that's so illogical. If anybody asked me, I could easily explain the situation. That was the only one where I missed it right and it blew up. And that's a memory of mine at FedEx St. Jude when I hit it just barely over those bunkers to the right. Cause I'm going 50 yards left of that. And so when I flare it right, it's into the wind off the right. I'm just like, it's not going to get there. And it flies that far for whatever reason. Cause I hit it high off the face. It doesn't hit anyone. It actually lands short and goes in. People are like, oh, he didn't yell four again. It's just like, okay, this thing dog legs 90 degrees left. Yeah. And like I flared it right. It's not going to get there. And I couldn't even yell four to make people aware of that situation. So that was one. I would love to explain another one. I don't know. Do you have one?
I don't know. I probably have. I don't know the exact single tee times, tee shots. I've got an idea for you though.
Yeah.
How you can kill two birds with one stone.
Okay.
Next time you think it's even in doubt, shout four and subscribe.
That's actually pretty funny.
So just four, like,
and subscribe.
Four and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Four. Because I think then you've covered your back.
That would be on the national, that would be all over the place. That would go viral.
You've covered your back. So if anything bad did happen, or if it hit somebody, you're teaching kids how you should be. And then also, and you're getting some subscribers.
I like the idea. I love it. Thank you.
So St. Andrews, I want to see four and subscribe.
Four and subscribe to my YouTube channel, please. Thank you.
Sorry if I hit you. Well, Bryson, you've been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Hopefully we're not taking up too much of your time. I know you've got to go and bomb some drivers now. I feel like we've covered every question to ask you.
No, that was amazing.
Genuinely would love to collaborate with you, make some cool videos. 100%. I think the 10-shot challenge would be really cool. And anytime you get over, let's make it happen.
Deal. Let's do it. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Bryson. Man. You're a superstar.
Thanks so much, mate.
All awesome. The best for the rest of the year.
Thank you. Take care.
Catch really, you soon. See you, Bryson. Mate.
See you.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.